in your best estimate, from your knowledge and understanding, because you have studied Russia, what would they do if we actually used Tomahawk missiles that were fired by American military forces at targets in Russia?
They would strike back. This would be a NATO attack on Russia. That is, it would be not just using American missiles. They would be operated by American personnel. They would be using American targeting data. They would be guided by American satellites, imagery identification, the targeting system. Everything would be Western. At most, Ukrainian might press the button. This is not, this would be a direct war. And that, this is kind of my point, that we keep seeing Russia being restrained, and we're trying to conclude, why is this? And our main hypothesis is, well, they're deterred by NATO. They do not dare to respond because, they wouldn't want to risk World War III. But the alternative, of course, they don't want World War III. But if you listen to Putin's comments in Valdai, he was also making the point. He was going into the numbers saying, listen, we are winning. The Ukrainians are taking higher and higher casualties. Their ability to replenish the ranks is that capability is reducing. So it's just a matter of time before there's no army anymore that can even manage these weapons. So the army is being destroyed. When there's no army, there's no war. And for this reason, they don't want to rock the boat too much because they see escalation now is not in our interest. We're winning anyways. This is the source. This is the reason why they're acting restrained, because they're losing in the current. Now they're winning in the current format. However, if you would start to do long range strikes deep into Russia, hitting a manufacturing, hitting energy centers or political targets, the idea that they would say, oh, well, I guess we're losing now. This is, unfortunate. No, the calculation would end. They would strike back. I mean, I hope.
And when you say strike back, what is the possibilities, the range of possibilities that they might strike?
Well, first of all, they have other weapons and other targets. The other weapons would, for example, be the Oreshniks, which would bring mass destruction. And they wouldn't just hit Ukraine. I think they would start to go after European targets as well. And possibly American also. So this is incredibly dangerous. Well, they will probably go up the escalation ladder. They might use Oreshniks against key targets in Ukraine. They might use Oreshniks in Europe against countries like Germany, who doesn't have nuclear weapons. And then if it continues to escalate, they have this option. It's just the whole premise of it, that we can just start striking them directly and somehow Russia will just capitulate. I mean, It's beyond absurd. I would like them to actually flesh out their ideas when they say this. We just have to be strike them harder, be more direct, more powerful weapons. Why do we think the Russians would not respond if these weapons actually became significant on the battlefield?
I think the reason is because we haven't so far. So many of these so-called red lines were self-imposed that we just declared it was a red line for Russia. They didn't actually say it, like with tanks and artillery pieces and other kinds of support. They warned against it, but they didn't actually say a red line or so. But there seems to be something close to a red line on this one here. But let's talk me through, the thought process and the pros and cons that would have to go on in the event that it was used, that a Tomahawk was used and hit something painful, let's just say, because Russia would then be faced with this dilemma. Okay, there's not that many Tomahawks. You're going to cause some damage here. We're probably going to shoot a bunch of them down. You're going to further deplete your case. So if I don't do anything and just keep fighting in the SMO, we're eventually going to win. We can grind it down. But if I do nothing, they'll probably keep firing some of these, and maybe the pain will get a little bit more than just uncomfortable. But if I retaliate, then now all of a sudden I've got potentially, I don't know that everybody would fight against Russia, but then potentially you've got a whole bunch of countries, certainly the Baltics, maybe Poland, UK, Germany, France. They seem really eager to get in. So you could potentially, if Russia takes that course of action, actually now expand to a lot of different countries going up against them. So that would now then what do you do? Because like you said a second ago, all your calculations are now off the table for what you thought you were going down to. And that is a much, much bigger problem set. How do you see that competition going on in the thought process in Russia?
Well, I think this has been the main dilemma the Russians have been confronted with for the past 3.5 years. That is, what do you do every time the Ukrainian army begins to end up on its back foot and NATO escalates a bit further? Keep in mind that Biden himself once said that F-16s would mean World War III. Now, that's a long time ago. Now it's a nothing burger, essentially.
Yeah, it didn't mean anything, as it turned out.
But for the Russians, they didn't go up the escalation ladder when this happened, because they were faced with a dilemma. If they do strike back at directly at NATO, then they might risk World War III. If they don't, then they will embolden NATO to continue to escalate further, because NATO will see restraint as weakness. And this is the main problem. So all the restraint now is being punished, and you see this in our papers as well. Oh, the Russians don't dare to do anything. Look what we've done. We stepped over all these imaginary red lines. But nonetheless, this is a key issue, which is they have to address in the Kremlin, which is how do we restore our deterrent? Because in the past, 3-4 years ago, at least the Europeans were quite cautious. You don't want to provoke the Russians too much. Now they're just openly talking about launching their missiles deep into Russia. We're openly talking about war with Russia. You had Ben Wallace, the former defense secretary in the UK, arguing that, you know, we have to strangle Crimea, make it unlivable. This kind of rhetoric, or the US general responsible for NATO in Europe,
Donahue. Kaliningrad.
Yeah, saying, oh, let's invade Kaliningrad. We could do it. I mean, this is, you're going to invade an actual region of Russia with over 1 million people. What are you going to do with these people? Are they going to live under NATO occupation? It's beyond absurd. What do you think Russia would do? What would America do if Russia or China tomorrow invaded California? I mean, we could do it quickly. I mean, if we take them by surprise, yeah, but what happens the day after? Do the American capitulate? Do they say, oh, well, I guess we'll manage to live without California? No, it's crazy. But this is the way we talk now. So the Russians, they see they're partly to blame for this, because they've let, every escalation go unanswered, and they've been emboldening NATO. So they see this as a problem, and that they have to at some point hit back against us.
Let me ask you, where, in kind of the last bit of time we have here, where you see things going? Because at a separate event from Valdai just a couple of days ago, I think it was called the Reunification Day, if I'm not mistaken, Vladimir Putin was given a congratulations to some of his military members, but he gave, a bigger signal to anyone who's listening.
I address the soldiers and officers, the real heroes of our time, with a special feeling. I thank you for your loyalty to your motherland, for your military valor and courage, for every day of your hard combat work. I am sure that, thanks to you, the security of Russia will be reliably ensured, and the long-awaited and strong world will return to the heroic land of Donbass and Novorossiya. We are together, and this means that all our plans will be realized.
So he didn't say that we're going to just take the Donbass, which originally or early in the war was kind of like the primary objective here. He specifically mentioned Novorossiya, which includes a lot more than just the Donbass. What do you make of that comment?
Well, I think that might be the escalation coming on the Russian side, because, again, it seems as if, we think that the Russians don't uphold the red lines, because whenever they step across it, we pretend as if it happened in a vacuum. So, for example, we said nothing when the Russians for years and years warned against NATO expansion, do not go into Ukraine. Then 2014, they took back Crimea. We say, oh, this came out of nowhere. Well, that was a reaction. In 2022, they've been warning for 8 years, implement the Minsk agreement. Well, and then, of course, they invaded in 2022. When we sent all these weapons, they annexed these four oblasts of Lugansk, Donetsk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson. So I think that this is the response they might come with soon if it continues down this path. And indeed, this is also, I mentioned before, the former advisor of Zelensky, Arestovich. He was making the point that why he would go and accept the loss of these four regions to Russia, because he argued, if you don't give up those four regions, we're going to lose four more. So it's not
they are on that map right there.
Yeah, so it's not the difference between giving away four regions or none, this utopian idea, but it's either we lose four or we lose eight. And Novorossiya is essentially the historical regions of Russia, which were transferred to Ukraine under the Soviet Union. Everything then from Kharkov to Odessa. And this is, again, historical Russian regions. This is where the Russian speakers are. This is where most of the industries are, the resources. This is where the entire coastline is to the Black Sea. So this is also the regions which Russia would be able to hold, given that this is where the ethnic Russians are living, the Russian speakers. And so I think this is the territory that Russia might go for now. And this is the problem of refusing to negotiate with the Russians. We're not helping Ukraine. Every day they're losing more men, more territory, and they're moving towards collapse. We're entering the final stages here. And if there is collapse, Russia will then take all territories. And this is all the territories of Novorossiya. And this is the problem by continuing to promise future NATO membership, which we do.
What do you say to those people like Macron, who last month in an interview that we showed here on this channel, literally mocked the idea that Russia could take all that stuff, of saying, look, they've only taken 1% in the last 2 years, and there's no way they're going to be able to take more of that. What do you say to that?
Well, in a war of attrition, you don't go for the territory right away, especially when the territory is heavily fortified and well defended by trained Ukrainian soldiers. In a war of attrition, you exhaust the adversary first. You don't want to pay too heavy manpower price for territory. And that's what we've seen happening. So Macron is measuring this all wrong. Why is he mentioning the percentage of territory? Why isn't he pointing out that Ukraine has had its military completely destroyed, that NATO has emptied all of their weapons depots? It's all been destroyed, all burning in Ukraine. Why don't they mention the massive manpower problem they have in Ukraine, all the people who have not just been killed or injured, but fled the country, many defected to Russia, others surrendered. But anyways, everyone's recognizing we don't have the weapons, we don't have the manpower. This is not controversial. Well, this is the measurements of attrition in warfare. When the Ukrainians don't have an army, then the Russians can march forward without taking many losses. And that's what you're seeing now. The front lines are moving very, very quickly now. And this is because the manpower has been reduced. This is why they didn't storm and do this human waves, which we keep accusing them of doing. So Macron is looking at the wrong way. When the Ukrainian army collapses, Russia will take the territory it wants. And if we continue to threaten to expand NATO after this war, the only thing the Russians are hearing is, well, then we can't leave any strategic territory left because this could be used against Russia in the future. So they will strip Ukraine of four more territories. And for someone who would like to see Ukraine survive as a nation, be able to rebuild, it's a horrible idea. So we should sit down with the Russians today and accept that we lost this proxy war.
Yeah, and that's kind of my last question here in the last few minutes we have. Let me ask you this really difficult question to answer. If we don't escalate into a direct confrontation with Russia, and I do not take that as a given, I think that is a very real possibility, which I worry about a lot. But if we were able to, how do you think that the West could manage or navigate a case to where Russia ends up, we'll say, taking Novorossiya, because there's no negotiations to just take the four oblasts. Therefore, Russia will at some point, whether it's a collapse or however else, will end up taking the others, whether that's 6 months from now, 2 years from now, who can say? But at some point they come in. How do we navigate with everything that we've done? Then everybody in the world will see this powerful, most powerful NATO alliance, it's in the history of mankind, which they always say about themselves, couldn't even keep Ukraine from falling into Russians' hands eventually, and now their own arsenals are depleted. How will we manage and navigate that?
In terms of narrative, you think, or
in any term? I mean, sure we would lie about it, but I mean, can we allow it to just where we'll just say we didn't lose, even though it's the territory's gone.
Well, there's different ways. One is we just move on to the next thing. So if there's a war against Iran, we can shift our focus. I mean, it was humiliating what happened in Afghanistan, but we kind of just moved on to Ukraine instead. So that's one way we often do it. Another one is to claim victory. That is, if we say, well, Russia wanted all of Ukraine, if you remember. They, you know, it's not real, but that's okay. If you say they wanted all of Ukraine, they only got 20%. In other words, we won. We were able to prevent, you know, their military adventurism. This is, I guess this is a fallback option, and it's it helps to save face, but it doesn't help us to learn anything because it obviously it's not true, but it could be positive in the extent that if this is what's preventing us from making peace. So I'm assuming that we'll fall back on this. The Russians wanted to wipe Ukraine off the map. 80% is here. We win. Yeah.
That would be the least bad of all the awful options we would have. What percentage, last final question, what percentage would you give, if you had to give a number, that we end up in a conventional clash with Russia? How worried are you about that?
I think it's more likely than not at this point. The Europeans seems overly eager now to get a war with Russia. The only thing they want is to make sure that the Americans are standing behind them. But you see these fake stories and this eagerness for war. I mean, the new thing, the drones near airports, this is the big thing in the Russian hybrid war. I mean, they're arresting people now almost on a daily basis, but there seem to be every nationality except Russians. They have Germans and Norwegians and a Chinese tourist, but there's no Russians. But still, they're talking about this as if it would be a hybrid war. We're having fake stories about scrambling the plane of von der Leyen and all this, you know, Russian jets flying for 12 minutes into Estonia. You can fly across the whole country and back again. I mean, this is a small country. None of this makes any sense. And so they're caught lying all the time, but they're just moving on to the next lie. And it's quite exhausting. But it's this eagerness now. They see that the war is being lost on battlefield. They're looking for a way to escalate. And I think we passed the line now where a major direct war with Russia is more likely than not.
Well, that's a pretty frightening thought, one which worries me a lot already on the now, maybe a little bit more. But yes. Listen, one thing that's important is you've got to be able to know what the truth is. And one of the reasons why we have this channel, and we're very grateful for having you on it today, because we have a very sober, fact-based analysis that shows there is a rising danger. And if you're at least aware of that, then at least there's the possibility that we can sober up in time and start changing some policies. And for that, we're very grateful for your commentary today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we appreciate you guys too. Be sure and go to Glenn Deason. You can find him right there on his YouTube channel. You don't have to wait for him to come back on our channel again sometime. You can go find him out. I was looking at some stuff just the other day.
Glenn, did you actually write all those books up top there?
I wrote 11 books, but they've been translated to about 10 languages. So
So you can go with that too if you want to read some. I know a lot of our guys like to read stuff. Again, thank you very much for coming on. Really appreciate that. And we'll look forward to seeing you back real soon.
Excellent. Thank you.
And we thank you guys too. Really appreciate you. Be sure and join us back tomorrow again. We're going to have a lot more to say about most of these topics. And see you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.